We're looking at, in our study, getting to know Jesus through the Old Testament. And specifically, some of the things that we've been focusing on lately have been looking at how did Jesus see himself in his mission and his ministry, and where did he get the ideas from that he had? Well, of course, we know, as we've said already, that Jesus lived under the old law, and he grew up learning the scriptures. Well, which scriptures were those? The Old Testament scriptures. Okay, so you know, when we look at it, and hopefully through this study, one of the things that has been, you know, on your mind a lot more and helping you to look at Jesus more from the humanity aspect than where we tend to look at Jesus just as being God. You know, we need to understand all of this in light of Jesus being human. What did he know? How did he know it? And all of those things. Well, he learned those things just like you and I learn things. See? He learned the things that he knew from being taught the scriptures. And again, those Old Testament scriptures. So how did those kinds of things influence him in his ministry? Well, last week we were focusing our attention on the use of the term Messiah. And when we were looking at that, we begin to understand that Jesus' concept of the Messiah was different than the concept that the people of Jesus' day had. Now, let's just kind of quickly review here, where did those concepts of the Messiah really come from? Anybody recall? Well, partly from Isaiah, but mostly they came not as much from a lot of teachings of the Old Testament as much as from this time period that we're looking at, of this between the testaments, or actually the time between the temples, as we've been talking about, during this post-exilic time, in other words, the time after the exile of the Israelites going back to Jerusalem, and then all the way up from that particular point all the way up to the beginning of the New Testament. In a good part of that time, and we're talking about several hundred years, the Bible is silent on what was taking place, and that's why it's referred to as the time between the testaments. There's no biblical information as to what was going on from the end of the time of Malachi to the beginning of the Gospel of Matthew. But there were, as we've already seen, a lot of things that were taking place, a lot of things historically and culturally that were influencing the Jews and the thoughts of the Jews, that in a sense kind of set up the atmosphere, so to speak, for the time when Jesus was actually here. Okay, and when we look at the concept of the Messiah, and we realize, and one of the things that we've talked about the last few weeks is the oppression that the Israelites felt and were under during this time period. They had not been a free people since before the exile, since the captivity. Okay, they had been a conquered people all along. And so part of their desire was to be free. And this whole concept, as we've been talking about the last few weeks, of the restoration, the hope that they had of the restoration of Israel, you see, really contributed greatly to the idea of this Messiah. Okay? But their idea of the Messiah, as we said last week, was one who was going to do what? What was the Messiah going to do? He's going to be what kind of king? He's going to be an earthly king. What else about him?
Set him free.
Okay, he's going to physically set him free. In other words, he's going to lead an army, isn't he? You see? He's going to sit on David's throne, and he's going to restore the kingdom of Israel physically to its former glory. That was the concept that the Israelite people generally had. Now, how did that concept fit into Jesus' idea of the Messiah? What was his idea of a Messiah? Okay, the kingdom's going to be spiritual. It's not going to be physical, other than that it's going to be the physical church, okay? What else? There's not going to be any fighting going on, okay? Turn the other cheek. Put your sword away, right? You know, all of those kinds of things. What else? It's going to be for all people, not just for the Israelites. What else?
He's going to have to die.
Okay, yeah. Primarily, the major difference between what the people had in their mind as a Savior and as a Messiah was that, yeah, this king was going to come and reign and establish, and Jesus' concept was from the beginning, no, the Messiah is going to have to die in order for this kingdom to be established. You see? So what we saw in this is that there's a big clash, isn't there, between, you know, the Messiah the people were expecting and longing for and the Messiah that Jesus wanted to be. So one of the things that we talked about in all of this was that Jesus, though he did use that term, applying it to himself on several different occasions, he also, in using that term on some of those occasions, told the people that he had used it with not to say anything about it. Okay? And so it seems that Jesus was in some ways trying to downplay the use of that particular concept of him being the Messiah, okay, because of, again, the conflict that it was going to bring about in terms of what the people wanted. If, in other words, if he's clearly identified to the people as the Messiah, then what are they going to want to do with him? They're going to try to make him, in fact, they did try to make him king by force, right? And this goes against everything that Jesus wanted to do. So therefore, we see this kind of downplaying by Jesus of the fact of him being the Messiah that they were looking for and waiting for. Okay? Though, after Jesus' ascension, and we see the beginning of the church, we see quite a different thing happening, don't we? In terms of the Messiah. Okay? The use of the term Messiah was widely used by the disciples in spreading the gospel. They referred to him constantly as Jesus Christ. Okay? Which was the word for Messiah to them. Okay? He was pointed as the Christ. He was the one they were waiting for. They preached that boldly, though Jesus tended to kind of minimize that aspect. Now, here's where we're going with this, and the reason for this review. What we saw happening was that Jesus was, in a sense, kind of downplaying, you know, this Messiah, the use of that word and association with that, with him in that. But there's another term that Jesus used widely about himself. Okay? And it's kind of a, been somewhat of a confusing term to a lot of people. Anybody know what that term is? Son of Man. Jesus referred to himself very often as the Son of Man. More often, many more times than he referred to himself as the Messiah. Okay? The question on a lot of people's mind, and I don't know if you how much you've looked at it a whole lot, but where's that term come from and what does it mean? You see? And why did Jesus use it so broadly? Okay? Ray, go ahead. Exactly. Kind of hard to find a lot of stuff on it, isn't it? I'm talking about in terms of trying to figure out what is it really. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Well, that's because basically the word In Hebrew, the word Ben Adam basically means a human being. That's what it means. Okay? And it's not used in the scriptures and not even generally in literature from that time. It's not generally used the way Jesus used it as a title. Okay? It's just simply used as a word to refer to a human being. Some would say, well, I'm a man, you see. And its use oftentimes was kind of associated. Again, it's sometimes a little bit difficult to figure out, and scholars have tried to, you know, really reconcile all this and figure this out, but it really is used in a way for a person oftentimes to be talking about themselves, where they would say I or me, that word would be used. Say. So, how did Jesus come about using that word? And again, oftentimes, in a sense, as a title for himself. As Ray pointed out a moment ago, actually, it's used 93 different times in Ezekiel. Okay? And it's used there as a way to refer to the prophet himself. Okay, Ezekiel is constantly being called the Son of Man. In Aramaic, which is the language that Jesus spoke, Galilean Aramaic, okay, the word Bar-Nash had the same meaning. Okay, a human being, a person, a man. Okay, so Jesus, as we've talked about, was downplaying the use of Messiah. All the while, he was really emphasizing the use as a title for himself, this phrase, the Son of Man. And probably more than anything, he did that as a means to avoid the problems that were associated with, as we've been talking about, the people's expectation of the Messiah. Okay, it kind of, you know, takes some of that away from it, though he's identified himself, as we saw last week in different occasions, that, but yet at the same time he's talking about himself as the Son of Man. And that in itself probably would have caused people that are hearing it, and it did actually, we're going to see here in just a moment, time where they're going, wait a minute. What is this? Hold on just a second here, Ted, if you don't mind. And what this using this term actually did for Jesus was that it allowed him to define that term himself. In other words, to put his own meaning and application to that term. In other words, Jesus got to take a term or a word that was just very commonly used, referring to a human being, he got to take that and make something of it that really gave more of the identity that he wanted to be known by the people by. See? That wouldn't bring the same kinds of problems associated with what the people's expectations of the Messiah were and so forth. Jesus got to define that. He got to define what that was, what it meant, who it referred to, and so forth, you see, by using a term like that. He was then able to make that term fit his perception of who he was and what he came to do. Does that make sense? Okay. Ted, what you had a comment there.
Thinking Ezekiel used the term of a prophet. It seems to have the association of a prophet, or also of the authority that's in the prophet, the spokesman for God.
Right.
And Jesus seems to use it this way in John 5th chapter. He says, "For as the Father has life in himself, so he has granted the Son to have life in himself." and has given him authority to execute judgment also, because he is the Son of Man.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
He's given authority for judgment because he is the Son of Man.
Right. And see, that's part of Jesus's, and we're going to go through and talk about that in a little bit more detail here. That's part of Jesus taking that common term and developing it, as I was just saying, to be used the way he wanted it to be understood. Now, here's one of the things about that. Because this word or this term really didn't have any kind of a prefixed meaning, it caused a lot of confusion sometimes among the people. You know, this Son of Man. For instance, look over in John chapter 12. Turn over there and let me get somebody to read for us, beginning in verse 23 down to verse 34. And this is in the part where there's some Greeks that come, and they go to Andrew and Philip, and they request to be able to see Jesus. Okay, they want to be able to have an audience with Jesus. Philip goes and he tells Andrew, and Andrew and Philip go to Jesus and tell him, hey, there's some folks here that want to see you. I'm going to get somebody to pick up in verse 23 and read down to verse 34 for us.
But Jesus answered them, saying, the hour has come that the Son of Man should be glorified. Most assuredly, I say to you, unless a grain of wheat falls into the ground and dies, it remains alone. But if it dies, it produces much grain. He who loves his life will lose it. He who hates his life in this world will keep it for eternal life. If anyone serves me, let him follow me. And where I am, there my servant will be also. If anyone serves me, him my Father will honor. Now my soul is troubled. And what shall I say? Father, save me from this hour. But for this purpose I came to this hour. Father, glorify your name. Then a voice came from heaven saying, I have both glorified it and will glorify it again. Therefore the people who stood by and heard it said that it had thundered. Others said an angel had spoken to them. Jesus answered and said, this voice did not come because of me, but for your sake. Now is the judgment of this world. Now the ruler of this world will be cast out. And I, if I am lifted up from the earth, will draw all people to myself. This he said, signifying by what death he would die. And the people answered him, we have heard from the law that the Christ remains forever. And how can you say the Son of Man must be lifted up? Who is the Son of Man?
Do you see what's taking place in this scenario here? You know, you got these Greeks that come, and they want to have some, you know, some face time with Jesus, as we would say today, you see. And so, you know, Philip and Andrew go to Jesus and say, hey, we got these folks that want to talk to you. And Jesus doesn't really even address them, does he? Not directly. But instead, what is this speech here that he just gave really all about? What is he saying here? He begins, first of all, by identifying himself as who? The Son of Man, okay? So right away, do you suppose that the people, when they heard him again use this phrase, as no doubt several of them had probably heard, you know, oftentimes, Son of Man, and then what are the kinds of things that he's saying about himself, and what are they hearing? Yeah.
You know, the grain of wheat's going to die. You're going to be
picked
up. You know, my servant, you know, what are you talking about? This is not, you know, what the king is supposed to do.
Yeah. Look in verse 34 again at their response, okay? The crowd answered him, we have heard from the law that the, who?
Christ, the Messiah.
The Messiah remains forever. How can you say that the Son of Man will be lifted up? Who is this Son of Man? You see, Jesus is saying, look, you need to understand something. The Son of Man came to do what? To die. Which goes completely against their concept of this Messiah, as we've been saying all along, that they're looking for. And that's why they're saying, wait a minute. No, the Messiah's not going to die. So they're kind of confused about this. They're looking at Jesus because he's been pointed out as possibly the Messiah. But he's saying to them, in talking in terms of the Son of Man, and this Son of Man is going to die. So then this confusion that they're having, going, who is this Son of Man you're talking about? You see, this is Jesus being able to, in a sense, kind of set the parameters of who he really is. Not what their expectations of him are, but who he really is and what he really came to do, right? Their expectations are totally counter to what Jesus is really all about. So he's chosen a term to identify not only himself, but his mission. You see, in a completely different way than what they expected. Now, it's interesting that with one exception, Jesus is the one who uses this term to refer to himself. Okay? In all these different times that it's used, Jesus is the one who's using it, except in Acts chapter 7, verse 56, where Stephen uses that term, see, as he's being stoned to death. He acknowledges and recognizes that the Son of Man. Now, another thing that's interesting about this term is that, again, what we see is you know, kind of different here. It's almost the opposite. Where I mentioned to you earlier, after Pentecost, the disciples used the term to identify Jesus, the Messiah or the Christ. They used it freely and openly. Whereas after Pentecost and the beginning of the church, they didn't use this term very much at all. See, they referred to Jesus as the Christ, as the Messiah. You see, so you see this kind of a transition that's taken place where Jesus wasn't using Messiah a whole lot to refer to himself before he died. The disciples use it extensively afterwards, where Jesus used this term extensively before he died. The disciples very rarely, if ever, used the term to refer to Jesus. You see? Explain that one. Okay? Why do you suppose that is? Or you think it's just an accident? I don't believe in that. Okay? Why do you suppose that is?
Okay. To his ministry on earth. After Pentecost, you know, the apostles got it.
Right.
And they really didn't need that concept as an active one. Christ had done his thing. I hope that's not flippant. Okay. You know,
no, I understand.
He had died. He had been, you know, raised by the power of God. And so, you know, the kingdom was ushered in. So the Son of Man idea kind of faded into its place in history. And the Messiahship came to the
It had, by that time, it had served its purpose, really. Okay? And if you go back to a point that we've talked about many times, we've mentioned, you know, there at the ascension of Jesus, what was the crucial question that the disciples asked of Jesus before he ascended? Yeah. Are you at this time going to restore the kingdom? You see, they still didn't get it, did they? You see? So that goes back to the whole issue of why did Jesus downplay so much the idea of the Messiah? Because even his disciples didn't really get it. They didn't understand, you see. But this idea of the Son of Man that Jesus got to himself identify and kind of identify himself with this term and set the parameters for what that meant and so forth, you see, once they got it, okay, as Steve says, once they got it, you see, there's no more need to kind of downplay Messiah. In fact, it's very easy now to go, okay, this one that we've been talking about, yeah, he's the Messiah. He's the one we've been waiting for. And this is the nature of the kingdom. You see, the very one who claimed himself and appointed himself to be the Son of Man is the very same one who is the Messiah, the one we've been waiting for. Okay? So therefore, after the ascension and the day of Pentecost, there wasn't a tremendous need anymore to avoid the use of the term Messiah or the Christ. In fact, it was needed even more so that people could make that connection. Brian? Okay. Now, let's look a little bit deeper into the meaning that Jesus applied to this phrase. Okay, the Son of Man. Did you have a... Oh, I thought you had your pencil up there. Okay. So, as we try to understand, how did Jesus use this, and what did it? What was the meaning he was trying to portray to the people at that particular time? And what we see as you go through and you look at the scriptures in Jesus as he's using this, that the use of it really falls into three major categories. Okay, the first one is where Jesus used it to talk about his present earthly ministry. Okay, where the use of that tend to emphasize his authority. And somebody, Ted, I think you mentioned this a few moments ago. They emphasize his authority over things like sickness and over nature and over sin. Jesus had, as the Son of Man, he had this certain authority to do and to accomplish certain things that nobody else could do or accomplish. Okay? For instance, look over in Mark chapter 2. In verse 10, this is the story of where this man who was lame was brought to Jesus, and they couldn't get him in to see Jesus, so they cut the hole in the roof and they let him down right in front of Jesus. And look at what Jesus does here in this situation. Okay? The first thing that Jesus says to the man is what? Your sins are forgiven. Okay, that's kind of odd, isn't it? I mean, you know, there's no mention of sin, you know, in this. This man, obviously, he needs some medical help, doesn't he? He's got physical deformities here that need attention. That's why they brought him to Jesus. Sin, most likely, wasn't even on the radar screen of anybody in that audience, and probably not his friends, and probably not himself either. But yet, that's the first thing that Jesus addresses, isn't it? Son, your sins are forgiven. Okay? And then what happens as a result of this statement that Jesus makes, Steve?
Well, we, I think, should sometimes miss the impact of this statement
okay.
to the Jews at that time. And to this day, it persists, you know, the idea that if people are sick, if it's because of some sin in their
right.
life or a sin of their parents,
mm-hmm.
which is common
right.
you know,
oh, yeah.
theological debate at this time.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, Jesus, he threw a hand grenade.
Oh, he absolutely did.
He said that. Okay, yeah, the yeah. scribes and Pharisees were just shocked. And then they're like, why does this man blaspheme?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, that's just something you didn't claim to do.
Yeah. To be able to forgive yeah. sins was up to
it
who?
Was up to God.
So in essence, what was Jesus claiming? To be God. And you need to understand this. Those Pharisees and teachers of the law that were there, they understood what Jesus was claiming. Okay? All right, so then, in their objections to what Jesus has just claimed about himself, how does Jesus respond next? Which is easier? To say your sins are forgiven or to get up and walk? But that you may know that who? The Son of Man. Wait a minute. Didn't he just identify himself with being God? By claiming the authority to take away sins? What were you going to say, Liz? Yeah. And now he's saying, so that you may know that who? The Son of Man has authority where? On earth to forgive sins. I say to you, pick up your mat and go home. Hand grenade? That's an understatement. Okay? I mean, this is like, you know, an A-bomb going off in the room here, okay? I mean, this is like, whoa, what has he just done here? Has he not just associated himself with the Messiah, with being God, but yet clearly identified himself as the Son of Man and used that term? Ted, you had your hand up a moment ago.
I think in Michigan seeds, the Son of Man has to do with the current service. God was serving as the Son of Man
mm-hmm.
you know, when Jesus was here.
Right.
And I think Paul points out that Christ is at the right hand of God now in heaven. And therefore, it doesn't say the Son of Man. It uses the term heavenly man. Christ now is serving as the heavenly.
Right.
That's even a different kind of association.
Oh, yeah.
Because in heaven, we have man. Think about that.
Well, and the next part of our study is going to go into looking at the whole issue of the suffering servant and Jesus' understanding of himself as that. But you know, you look at Jesus' use of this term in that way, and he's exercising authority here, you see, claiming authority over different aspects of humanity. Look in Matthew chapter 7 and verse 29. There, after Jesus gives this teaching, this what is referred to as the Sermon on the Mount. There's a lot of stuff in this teaching time, isn't it? Notice what it is that Matthew says about Jesus. Who's got that? He taught how? As one having authority, what's the contrast that's here? Not as their teachers of the law. Okay? Who is it that's doing the teaching? The Son of Man. You see? Matthew chapter 21, verses 23 through 27. Can I get somebody to read that for us? Who's got it? Tom, go ahead.
Authority, are you doing the same?
Jacob was the closest. The deer has to be closest. I also will ask you one thing. If you tell me how that was explained by what authority I do explain. If that wasn't the song, where was it from? In heaven or somewhere else? And the reason among themselves saying, he said in heaven, he'll say to us, why then did you not believe him? If he says from men, he fears the multitude, for all counts down and confounded. So the answer to Jesus said, so we do not know. And he said to them,
Now, why do you suppose Matthew included this little pericope in, you know, in the scriptures here? This little story right here. What's it all about? Why are they questioning Jesus on this? Because authority is vitally important in their world. Okay? Who has authority to do certain things, and where that authority originates from, you see, is a central part of the Jewish life, especially when it comes to matters of religion and faith and so forth. Okay? Who had the ultimate authority? The high priest. Okay? Everybody else got their authority from the high priest. Okay? And so that's the basis for this question. You're claiming certain authority here. Where did you get it from? You see? Because the high priest didn't give it to you. So where did it come from? And that's the basis of their trying to trap Jesus and question him on this. Where do you get this authority? I got a question for you. They can't answer his question. So guess what? I'm not going to tell you where my authority comes from. What is that statement on behalf of Jesus doing? Don't miss this. Is he not taking the authority away from the high priest and giving it to himself? Yeah. You see, everybody understood that everybody answered to the high priest. And Jesus is saying, not me. I don't answer to the high priest. Okay? I have a higher authority. Okay? Rick?
You kind of covered my question.
Okay.
This was a legitimate question out of the heart.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And Jesus is identifying himself as the Son of Man, and he is taking authority. And that kind of riled folks, didn't it? Now, one other thing we're going to mention here, and then we're going to have to stop because we're out of time here. Matthew chapter 8 and verse 27, just another example where Jesus is on the boat with the disciples and he's sleeping and the storm comes up. And what's taking place here? They get concerned because of this storm. And they're feeling like they're going to drown out here on the lake, right? So they wake Jesus up. Lord, don't you care that we're about to die? Okay. And Jesus does what? Rebukes them for not having enough faith, and then what does he do? Yeah. He calms the wind and the waves, and what is their response to that? Who is this man that even the wind and the waves obey him? Who has that kind of authority to command the wind and the waves? That's their question. See? Jesus' answer is the Son of Man. Okay? The Son of Man. All right, we're out of time. We got to stop here. I'm sorry. This class just doesn't... We don't have enough time here. I'm going to... petition the elders that we have a class that's, you know, an hour and a half long. Y'all have to be here earlier. Okay, anyway, we'll pick up here next week and we'll look at the other two categories of Jesus' use of the word or the term the Son of Man. Thank you all very much.